Welcome to the latest episode of the People Will Talk podcast. Joining me in studio is Mary.
Hello.
And our special guest today is ourselves, talking about culture, which, to be fair, we talk about in every episode. And let's catch up with you and your cultural pursuits. I believe, a little birdie told me, that you've been reading a translation of the Odyssey, and you have a few comments to make.
Well, I've been reading a new edition of the Odyssey in Spanish, which is written from, it's translated from English. So that I'm not sure how, if it's going to be good or not, but the edition is very beautiful. You know, it looks really nice, hardback. It's got this little ribbon to mark where you're reading, which, you know, it's a nice detail. They actually gave an interesting justification for using the English translation, which was that they thought, even if it wasn't the closest one to the text, they thought it was actually the one that conveyed the story the best. So that's quite an interesting argument. And I can understand there's a reason for that. I'm not sure to what extent, you know, they're actually justifying the fact that that translation would have been out of copyright or whatever, so it was easy to use. But we'll see. I'll fill you up on that.
Fantastic. Okay. I hope reading it hasn't been an odyssey in itself.
You can laughter.
That was pretty good fake laughter. I'll give you credit for that. Since you haven't asked me, but I'll tell you anyway. I've been reading George Orwell's Homage to Catalonia this week. Flying through it, actually, to be fair. And I've really enjoyed it, what I've read so far, because I am kind of seeing little details about Spain that I mentioned to you before as well. He talks about in the Civil War, he would sneak up to the enemy lines. He would listen to what they were doing out of interest. 50% of that was kind of like gossiping. And another 50% was basically, well, are they going to attack us soon? And they were specifically told to, if they heard church bells, to tell the command, because that's when the fascists would attack after having a mass service. You know, they get blessings before going into battle, which I thought was like a very, it's one of those details when you read in a book, it's so specific and so unique. It's so real as a consequence of that. And he talks about how other people on the Republican side would try to tempt over the fascist guards by shouting through a megaphone for them to come over, you know, talking about all this delicious food that didn't exist, you know, and also like propaganda, you know, oh, the fascists won't look after the worker, you're just a common worker. And how George Orwell was initially disgusted by that, but then he came to see the value of that type of rhetoric, because it did provoke some people to abandon the fascist side, to desert and join the Republicans. So it's just full of these very unique insights, having, you know, because he lived that experience. And I think it's interesting to see him as such a big socialist, you know. That's really apparent in this book. And also, it's almost like reading Robert Service's poem about hunger and thirst. You know, that's a lot of writers and poets, and he's a writer, of course, George Orwell. And it's like every fifth page he talks about lice and the lack of food and the cold and everything as well. So I don't know, it's just a very visceral experience, it's mixed in with all these unique insights as well. That's my cultural week so far. I don't know, you are Spanish, this pertains to Spain. As a Spanish person, have you heard many people talking about George Orwell's little stint in Spain during the Civil War?
Well, I don't think it's the thing that he's most famous for here. I guess it's a bit of a paradox. So, yes. I don't know. The first thing that comes to mind is like 1984 or like Animal Farm. You know, that sort of thing. So it's a shame, because obviously it's a very interesting book, and a lot of people, a lot of foreigners that come to Spain have read that book before they came, or have read it when they were here, and they found it very significant. So
it's a bad book to read if you want to discover Spain, because he spends a little bit of time in Barcelona and then basically in Huelva for a lot of it, and Zaragoza, I think. And not really, not a lot happens. He's just like there waiting for war to happen.
Well, that's kind of a nice thing because normally the books about Spain is always like everything is happening, the whole is either like, Hemingway and the whole thing of the wolf fight or the beach or the party or whatever. So in a way, I like the fact that you're saying nothing happens and it's also in kind of like slightly random places.
Well, you mentioned the bullfighters. He actually does mention those in the book,
Well.
but not in great detail. While he's on leave, he wants to see a bullfight, but he realizes that most of the bullfighters are apparently fascists, so they're not around the Republican lines.
Surprise, surprise.
He gets injured, and also when he gets injured, he gets accused by the Russians of well, skullduggery. I don't know. Actually, I need to read that part, next part. That's the next part of the book. But he just came off a battle as well, which is really interesting because finally there is a battle where he's involved. And I think if you're familiar with the Western literature around the Spanish Civil War, like non-Spanish profiles of it, you're going to be aware that the International Brigades and the Republicans weren't the best stocked. But I kind of was surprised to learn as well that the fascist side were really poor in that regard as well. So I don't know. It's a, there are a lot of different dimensions to it, but it's fascinating. So yeah, so that's the book. I guess we can go on next to talk about something else, which is a photographic exhibition that we'll talk about in the next parts of this podcast. This is part two of the podcast. I actually forgot to mention that this book also falls into the genre of the non-Spanish person who simultaneously wishes he was Spanish, but also looks down at the Spanish people for being Spanish. A very confusing genre that
Yeah, quite abundant though.
quite abundant and predominantly English writers, I'll have to, it has to be said. But I think overall he's a big fan of Spain. Now, speaking of foreigners who are big fans of Spain, there is a Swedish photographer that we saw today. His name is, because I don't want to pronounce it.
I don't want to pronounce it either. Let's say Christian.
Fine. Strandheim. Strudel. Okay, so basically, okay, let's talk seriously now, of course, for example. So his name is Christer Stramholm, more or less.
Okay, yeah.
And he's famous for a few books, perhaps most famous for Poste Restante. Again, that might be butchered, that title. But let's start at the beginning. A Swedish photographer, quite experimental. At one time, he was part of an initiative where all the photographers took experimental photographs, double negatives, splicing together two different negatives, things like this. They all functioned as one entity, so nobody. No one photographer could submit their photographs to an exhibition without the express approval of somebody else in the organization. And then he went on to take photographs of post-Civil War Spain, France, lots of different countries, really, preoccupied with death, very popular in post-war circles as well. And other things that we're going to mention, of course, in this part of the podcast. So as always, let's start with your opinion. We've seen a choice selection of his photographs, so I'm sure you have some nice perspectives to share with us.
So the small room was the one about Spain, and that's the one we saw last, and that's the one that where probably there were a couple of things that were more interesting to me. I was saying to you earlier that perhaps it was because, when I was seeing the kids, there were certain elements, or I don't know, a family coming out of the church or whatever, which I could were familiar to me or I could identify with. I found the choice of pictures there a bit strange because, like I said to you, they focused a lot on, like, for example, sailors or even like prostitutes and your typical photos of like Guardia Civil, the civil guard here that are quite peculiar in their outfits and everything. So foreigners tend to photograph them a lot. And they're a big symbol of, the dictatorship, of course, as well. But yeah, I was surprised because he said that he used to join bus trips that came from Sweden to Spain. So that's quite a colorful thing. It's a shame. I don't know if he photographed those trips and things that happened during those trips, but I would have thought that would have been a lot more interesting. And there would have been a lot of material there. And then for the other ones, well, I think probably there were many that didn't say that much to us. But a couple of the Paris ones were perhaps more evocative.
Okay, let's break this down. I broadly agree with you. You mentioned the sailors. I think that was fascinating because there are sailors based in Spain, and it's such an old world image, isn't it? Like, just it speaks to something very much rooted in the past. You know, this was happening for centuries, and especially in the 20th century, of the American sailors in their white uniforms running around different port cities, or different cities. Because Madrid obviously is not a port city, and they came here as well. It's just so evocative of a time. That does it still exist today? I'm sure sailors are still doing it, but they don't have that same image. It's like
Thank God.
air hostesses and pilots from the 60s. You know, they had just like an air about them that they don't have anymore. And same with these sailors. But also speaking specifically about Spain, it's an underdeveloped angle about Spain, because a lot of Americans actually did live here, and they lived in their own community. It was like Little America. And obviously people are aware of that, but is there a lot written about it? I wouldn't say so. And then about the images of Spain, yeah, the Guerra Civil thing, you know, we have seen these images quite a lot, you know, in other exhibitions, and that is true. So as an modern day observer, or a member of the public looking at these photographs, is it interesting? Not so much. We've seen it before, but it seems to speak to this kind of air that they were projecting. Because I don't think police officers were so photographed in other countries. So I'm not sure what it is about the Guerra Civil that captured people's attention. Did they just project an air of menace?
And the hats.
And well, the hats are a big part of it. There's one picture where there's two Guerra Civil with a kid, which contrasts or compares to another image of Guerra Civil we saw in another exhibition, where they're just relaxing at a bullfight or a soccer game. And you know, so we sometimes see them in these contexts where it's not so typical, where it's not really an air of authority, but they still carry that air of menace as well. And I think that menace is underscored because we both thought independently there was one photograph of a Guardia Civil character or person, and we thought he was a Nazi for a second. So I think that dark uniform, especially in that post-war period, was very suggestive of another very conservative organization, the SS. I think, so yeah, there's power in those types of images. The Paris ones, which we can touch on a little bit later again. I know you mentioned them previously. But I think the problem, maybe if it is a problem, is that he was very focused on capturing graffiti or fragments of text. In some senses, it's like Magritte, where it's like words, and Magritte does it a lot better, of course. And what the problem is really is that a lot of these images are out of context. They lack any particular power or punch because they're just really, at the end of the day, random objects that in their time were part of maybe a movement or a way of expressing yourself that was innovative. But now, once you know, now that that innovation is not as punchy anymore, we're just left with these images that don't really say anything. That's my impression about the worst images in this collection.
Yeah, I was thinking we'll probably get slated by some people that, for example, the people that were at the exhibition that were big photography fans, and they wouldn't shut up talking, for example. We came across them.
Well, that's a common feature in Spanish exhibitions of people talking very loudly, and
Mm-hmm.
also very annoyingly, people asking, "Are you enjoying the exhibition?"
Yeah, and in this case, I thought it was somebody from the actual venue, you know, so I don't know if they're doing surveys of like customer satisfaction. But yeah, no, that's quite annoying. You always complain about that as well. They don't let you reflect.
It's like, well, I am here, am I? If I don't like it, they're not gonna take away the exhibition. It's there for a predetermined amount of
Yeah,
time.
but a lot of them, they're not even talking about that. They're just talking about random things.
Well, I heard one old guy asking one of the young girls working there if she had Instagram or TikTok. So I don't know if he was
Yeah,
was it slipping through her DMs or something.
well, I don't know. Pretty bad.
I guess, well, there's before we talk about the good photographs, because they are some. I think what's interesting as well is that his Spain series, it seems like apparently his most famous Spanish photographs are of kids showing the poverty in post-war, post-Civil War Spain. But again, we've seen those photographs in other exhibitions where there was an American guy in Paris who took pictures of kids after the war. I can't remember his name. He's quite famous.
An American in Paris.
Well,
That's his name.
was he a werewolf as well?
No, it's like the Gene Kelly movie.
And also
It's like the Gene Kelly movie!
thank you. Just in case they couldn't hear you there. No, because there's interesting details there, because there's pictures of these two kids with their ears sticking out, and he even says himself, afterwards I learned that's a massive sign of malnutrition. And many years ago we saw an exhibition about kids in post-Civil War Spain as well, and it kind of captured their poverty in a very kind of very evocative way, while his photographs today were kind of missing that element, you know. By the way, actually, he's referring a call back to another exhibition we saw as well. This is a tangent which also links to part one of the podcast. Ernest Hemingway said Republican photographers were better photographers than the fascists, which proves our conversation after we went to that many years ago, well, in another venue where we saw two photographers in the Civil War, one a fascist, one a Republican, and we both said the Republican was better. So Orwell agrees with us, and Hemingway as well. Anyway, that was a tangent. That's us complaining about the photographs, but let's talk about the good ones. What good one did you like?
Well, I think the ones were there were a couple of ones in Paris. There were quite a few in Paris trying to absorb the atmosphere. The text said that it wasn't romanticizing it. It was just, but then in the end, in Paris, it's always the same. You know, it's like the cafes and the Joie de Vivre or whatever. But in the 60s. But there were two that were of like a rainy day, and even though they were in black and white, it was just it instantly. You know, when you sort of like feel absorbed into something, and then because it evokes something, and you're like, ah, you know, at last, it has an effect on me. So there were a couple of ones where really transporting me to one of these like autumn days when, you know, it started like getting dark and getting darker earlier and be cold, and suddenly it just rains when you come out of the metro or whatever. And there was this woman with a bit of an umbrella, but also with some plastic bag or something across her head. And it sort of really made me think of how you feel in that particular type of day in autumn. So that was nice.
That's a very nice kind of anecdote around that photograph. There's one I liked of Montmartre, the French cemetery, because I've been there. I've been to I went around Paris with no money to my name, and I went around cemeteries and accidentally found the grave of Samuel Beckett. So there.
When Montmartre is like a pretty, it's like probably the most famous cemetery in the world.
Yeah, but Paris is full of ones, you know. So it wasn't just Montmartre. I was in other
Yeah.
ones as well. It was like an express stop
Because
of French cemeteries.
there's one in instead of having them outside the city, they have them like one per district, let's say. So they're in, so that's quite a
But no, but this particular photograph, it's winter, there's snow, and there's footprints in the snow, but no people. Metaphor for the people who've gone.
oh my God.
Very beautiful. And there's a couple of ones in France of, you know, in bars, there's a couple, are kind of like slumped over, a bit drunk maybe. It's kind of romantic and tender in its own decrepit way, like the Pogue, like a Pogue song or something. And there's a
Poor,
great
poor.
there's a great one as well of just like there's lots of chairs and a table, but between that you can see people outside on a terrace,
Yeah,
kind
no,
of
that one was a little bit more interesting.
very atmospheric, and it's playing with perspective and things like that. So but then there's the other images, like I mentioned his book earlier, which is kind of focused on
Dead
death.
dogs.
There's a dead dog in the cover. Yeah, that's
It's
effectively
a
it.
horrible.
So yeah, it's there's something for everybody, I guess, in those photographs. That's part two. Now for our Express Part 3. We have a book coming out very soon that we're publishing. We didn't write it though. It's called The Way by Dermot C. Miller, where a man troubled by the troubles in Northern Ireland seeks solace and absolution in the Camino of Santiago de Compostela. We'll talk more about that in future episodes as the release date approaches, but it's a very exciting novel. It kind of combines personal demons and the magic of northern Spain as well.
And we are also presenting our novel, La Vida en el Cráter, the one in Spanish. We're also presenting it again in Casa de León this time, which is like, this is very common in Spain. I don't know if it happens in other places, but basically they're like social clubs for people. When people used to emigrate to the city, to the big city, they gather together to do things from their area. So a lot of these things, in the 50s and the 60s, for example, sprung up. So La Casa de León is where people from León, like I'm from León, of course, they meet there to socialize and do events. So I'm actually very excited and very proud to be doing it there in March.
Do they eat Leon bars inside there?
No, but they eat amazing, like cocotte that, I'm not sure if they'll dish it out that day, but I'm hoping.
Fair enough. Well, you mentioned the TikTok earlier. We'll put a link to that in the description so people can see your wonderful deconstruction of the Odyssey. And you can find us on TikTok, Instagram, and yeah, that's pretty much it. So for today's episode, this is me saying good luck.
Bye.